News.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I believe we had a very productive meeting. There were many, many points that we agreed on, most of them, I would say, a couple of big ones that we haven't quite got there, but we've made some headway. So there's no deal until there's a deal.
Ahead of a summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Alaska, President Trump vowed Putin would face very severe consequences if he did not agree to stop the war in Ukraine. But after the meeting, Trump dropped his demand for a ceasefire. Today, he meets with Ukrainian President Zelensky and European leaders at the White House. We'll speak with Russia expert, Nation publisher Katrina Vandenhoevel. Then massive protests in Israel. Over a million Israelis call for an end to the war in Gaza ahead of Netanyahu's promised takeover of Gaza City. We'll go to Oren Ziv of 972 Magazine in Tel Aviv. Finally, President Trump's called for a far-reaching review of Smithsonian Museum exhibitions in order to ensure they align with his administration's views on history. We'll speak with the president of the Organization of American Historians, Harvard professor Annette Gordon-Reed.
It's unprecedented. It goes against the reason the Smithsonian was created as an independent entity that was supposed to follow the truth wherever it led and do history the way historians do it. This is an unprecedented interference with their autonomy.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump's meeting today at the White House with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and the leaders of Britain, Germany, France, Finland, and Italy, as well as NATO Chief Mark Rutte and the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. This comes 3 days after Trump met with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Alaska, but failed to secure a peace agreement. Ahead of the Alaska summit, Trump had vowed Russia would face very severe consequences if Putin did not agree to stop the war. But Trump then dropped his call for a ceasefire. Putin's insisting on Ukraine giving up the eastern Donbass as a condition for ending the war. Putin spoke Friday.
But at the same time, we are convinced that for the Ukrainian settlement to be sustainable and long-term, all the root causes of the crisis, which have been discussed repeatedly, must be eliminated. All of Russia's legitimate concerns must be taken into account, and a fair balance in the security sphere in Europe and the world as a whole must be restored. I agree with President Trump. He spoke about this today. That, of course, Ukraine's security must also be ensured.
Putin and Trump did not take any questions after giving brief remarks. On Sunday night, Trump posted a message online saying, quote, "Zelensky of Ukraine can end the war with Russia almost immediately if he wants to, or he can continue to fight," unquote. Trump said Zelensky must give up on joining NATO or reclaiming Crimea, which Russia annexed in 2014. Trump officials have floated the idea of the U.S. offering Ukraine some sort of security guarantee. Meanwhile, Zelensky's accused Putin of trying to humiliate diplomatic efforts by launching attacks over the past day that killed at least 10 people, including 3 children in Kharkiv and Zaporizhia. The U.S. State Department's halted all visitor visas from Gaza, including for children who need urgent medical care. The move was announced Saturday, one day after far-right activist Laura Loomer posted a video complaining that injured Palestinian children are coming to the United States for care. The U.S.-based Palestine Children's Relief Fund decried what it called a, quote, dangerous and inhumane decision, unquote. The group said, quote, medical evacuations are a lifeline for the children of Gaza who would otherwise face unimaginable suffering or death due to the collapse of medical infrastructure in Gaza, unquote. In more news from Gaza, Amnesty International has accused Israel of carrying out a, quote, deliberate campaign of starvation. That's, quote, systematically destroying the health, well-being and social fabric of Palestinian life, unquote. At least 263 Palestinians have now starved to death amidst the Israeli blockade. Meanwhile, Israel's intensifying its attacks on Gaza City as it moves to forcibly evict the city's entire population. On Sunday, an Israeli airstrike hit Al-Ahli Hospital in Gaza City, killing at least seven people. Hamas has accused Israel of engaging in a new wave of genocide and displacement over its plans to relocate all residents of Gaza City. This is a Palestinian medical student in Gaza City who sent this voice memo to a colleague in the U.S.
I just wanted to die right now. I think it's the only way I will find relief. I don't want to be displaced again, even. I'm so tired. I wish I could see you soon, even just for a moment, and hug you before I die.
Israel's Channel 12 has aired leaked recordings of Israel's former military intelligence chief saying 50 Palestinians must die for every victim of October 7th. In the recording, Aharon Haliva is heard saying, quote, it does not matter now if they are children. He said, quote, they need a Nakba every now and then to feel the price, unquote. In Israel, over 500,000 protested in Tel Aviv Sunday to demand an end to the war in Gaza and for the Israeli government to reach a deal to free the hostages in Gaza. Over 1 million Israelis took part in protests across the country as the families of Israeli hostages called for a nationwide day of stoppage. This is Lishe Maran Levy, the wife of Omri Maran, who is being held in Gaza.
Last week, we decided to call to everyone in Israel, to all the citizens, to stop, take a day and stop all the country in one saying, please release the hostages, bring them home and stop the war. We are really caring about our dear that over there, my Omri is over there 681 days. I miss him. Our daughters, Roni and Alma, really missed him. And I really, really scared and afraid about his life. I want him here and I want all the hostages here.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu blasted the protesters, saying, quote, those who call to end the war, delay the hostages' release, and guarantee that the horrors of October 7th will return, unquote. We'll have more on the protests later in the broadcast. The Trump administration's expanding its takeover of Washington, D.C., with the Republican governors of West Virginia, Ohio, and South Carolina agreeing to send at least 700 additional National Guard troops to D.C. In a major shift in policy, NPR reports National Guard troops in the nation's capital may soon be carrying weapons. Meanwhile, the Trump administration's backed down from its plan to install the head of the Drug Enforcement Administration as D.C.'s emergency police chief after D.C. sued U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi. This comes as video has gone viral of six masked federal officers detaining and tackling a food delivery driver after he left a coffee shop in Northwest Washington Saturday morning. The officers violently tackled the man, Christian Enrique Carias Torres of Venezuela, to the ground and appeared to use a stun gun on him. He was then taken away in an unmarked car as bystanders screamed at the officers. On Saturday, thousands of protesters marched to the White House to condemn Trump's takeover of Washington, D.C.
Troops on the corner! Feds on the block!
Troops on the corner! Feds on the block!
The fascist takeover must be stopped!
The fascist takeover must be stopped!
New York immigration advocates are demanding the release of a 7-year-old elementary school student who was taken into custody along with her 19-year-old brother and their mother at a routine check-in with ICE at 26 Federal Plaza in Manhattan last week. This is the first known ICE arrest of a New York City child under the age of 18 during Trump's second term. The city reports the girl and her mother were transferred to a newly reopened family detention camp in Dilley, Texas, while the teen was sent to the troubled Delaney Hall ICE jail in Newark, New Jersey. The family is from Ecuador and lives in Queens. This comes as some Democratic lawmakers are calling for New York Governor Kathy Hochul to shut the power off at 26 Federal Plaza to stop what they call ICE's occupation of the building. CNN is reporting the U.S. military is deploying more than 4,000 Marines and sailors to the Southern Caribbean, along with nuclear-powered attack submarines, spy aircraft, several destroyers, and a guided missile cruiser. The move comes after President Trump signed a secret directive authorizing the use of military force to carry out operations in Latin America under the guise of targeting drug cartels. The Congressional Budget Office has confirmed President Trump's new budget law will trigger over $500 billion in Medicare cuts in coming years. Democratic Representative Brendan Boyle of Pennsylvania said, quote, Republicans knew their tax breaks for billionaires would force over $500 billion in Medicare cuts, and they did it anyway, he said. The Republican law also includes $1 trillion in Medicaid cuts. In northwestern Pakistan and Kashmir, at least 337 people have died in climate change-induced flash floods. Dozens of people remain missing as landslides partially buried at least 10 villages. In Bolivia, two right-wing candidates are headed for a presidential runoff in October. The results of Sunday's election end more than a generation of rule by the socialist MAS party, which stands for Movement for Socialism. The Bolivian Senator Rodrigo Paz, the son of a former Bolivian president, placed first in Sunday's vote and will face off against the former right-wing president Jorge Tuto Quiroga, who finished second. Former Bolivian President Evo Morales, who was barred from running, urged his supporters to deface their ballots in protest. In the end, 19% of the ballots were deemed to be invalid. The official candidate from the MAS party won just over 3% of the vote, barely enough for the party to keep its legal standing as a national party. El Salvador's government will continue to detain more than 80,000 people accused of being gang members and swept up under President Nayib Bukele's state of emergency. Salvadoran lawmakers voted Friday to extend their imprisonment for at least 2 more years without trial, even as prosecutors have not yet presented any evidence linking tens of thousands of people to gangs. Protests broke out in the capital, San Salvador, with the families of detainees calling for their relatives' release and an end to Bukele's state of emergency. This is a Salvadoran mother whose son is being detained.
4 años.
My son has been there for 4 years. On May 10th, he completed 3 years, and now he's entering his fourth. Now I hear the news. They're saying there's a 2-year extension for him. How many more years do they have to hold him? Why do they give me this and not release him?
And the longtime Florida radio and TV host Rob Lori has died at the age of 70. He was among the founding members of WMNF Community Radio in Tampa, where he worked for over 35 years. Rob Lori appeared on Democracy Now! A number of times, including in 2009, when we broadcast Democracy Now! From Tampa.
So, you know, I wonder about the model of public broadcasting, whether or not, relying on those local donations, relying on CPB funding for a small fraction of the funding, whether or not that's a good model. I often look over at England and look at those licenses that people pay for radio and television and think, wouldn't that be a better way to fund broadcasting? We wouldn't have to go hat in hand to Congress every year and ask for a small appropriation.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump is meeting today at the White House with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and the leaders of at least five European nations, including Britain and France and Finland and Italy and Germany. This comes 3 days after Trump's meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Alaska failed to secure a peace agreement. Ahead of the Alaska summit, Trump had vowed Russia would face very severe consequences if Putin did not agree to stop the war. But Trump then dropped his demand for a ceasefire. Putin's insisting on Ukraine giving up the eastern Donbas region as a condition for ending the war. Putin spoke alongside Trump on Friday.
But at the same time, we are convinced that for the Ukrainian settlement to be sustainable and long-term, all the root causes of the crisis, which have been discussed repeatedly, must be eliminated. All of Russia's legitimate concerns must be taken into account, and a fair balance in the security sphere in Europe and the world as a whole must be restored. I agree with President Trump. He spoke about this today. That, of course, Ukraine's security must also be ensured.
On Sunday night, Trump posted a message online saying, quote, Zelensky of Ukraine can end the war with Russia almost immediately if he wants to, or he can continue to fight, unquote. Trump said Zelensky must give up on joining NATO or reclaiming Crimea, which Russia annexed in 2014. Trump officials have floated the idea of the U.S. offering Ukraine some sort of security guarantee. Meanwhile, Zelensky's accused Putin of trying to humiliate diplomatic efforts by continuing to attack Ukraine. Russian attacks have killed at least 10 people, including three children, over the past day in Kharkiv and Zaporizhia. For more, we're joined by Russia expert Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor and publisher of The Nation magazine. Katrina, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you first assess for us what happened on Friday and then talk about this? Well, it's amazing how large this meeting is going to be at the White House with the European leaders as well as Ukrainian President Zelensky and the heads of NATO and the European Commission.
There's sort of proxy wars on battlefields and in different capitals. Listen, I think the Trump administration has made so many grave domestic and foreign policy steps that it would take an entire show of many moons. But on the Ukrainian process, now moving from a ceasefire to a peace process, I think this what we're witnessing is a kind of a jaw, 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 talk, 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 and trying to find not just a ceasefire, but as several have said, root cause of this conflict. There's a difference between a ceasefire and a peace process. I do think there is, will be a remarkable scene, Amy, when we see the European leaders flanking Zelensky. There is room for dialogue. I think it's important that Putin, who launched this war of aggression, did speak of the need to providing security guarantees. Those will not be Russian security guarantees, but international security guarantees for Ukraine. I think this process is moving, and no summit, not even a well-prepared one, which the one in Alaska certainly was not, can resolve everything. I think this is important that the steps are that we're seeing steps forward and that there's an investment in diplomacy, not just in weapons. because the disinvestment in diplomacy and the investment in weapons has led to so many being killed, Amy, that it's time to end this war.
This is Russian President Vladimir Putin speaking Friday.
But at the same time, we are convinced that for the Ukrainian settlement to be sustainable and long-term, all the root causes of the crisis, which have been discussed repeatedly, must be eliminated. All of Russia's legitimate concerns must be taken into account, and a fair balance in the security sphere in Europe and the world as a whole must be restored. I agree with President Trump. He spoke about this today. That, of course, Ukraine's security must also be ensured. Of course, we are ready to work on this. I would like to hope that the understanding we have reached will allow us to get closer to this goal and open the way to peace in Ukraine. We hope that Kyiv and the European capitalists will perceive all of this in a constructive manner and will not create any obstacles or attempt to disrupt the emerging progress through provocations or behind-the-scenes intrigues.
So that's Russian President Vladimir Putin. It's interesting that he says, of course, Ukraine has to have security guarantees. Now, what exactly does this mean? Is he actually talking about if the U.S. makes those security guarantees, U.S. troops could be on the ground in Ukraine?
So that, I think, is the break point. That's the Rubicon, Amy. I mean, what I think, and Witkoff, the envoy, the special envoy to Moscow, said on a Sunday show the other day about you might see U.S. troops on the ground. I don't think that's you're going to see that. What he's calling on Putin is Europe to take more of the burden of this. But let me just step back for a moment. This is a regional security humanitarian crisis. Ukraine is not a core U.S. interest. President Obama said that. It is an important to resolve this crisis. 69% of Ukrainians seek a peace negotiation. The United States, not to link treasure of real lives and money, but has put in $175 billion into Ukraine, security, weapons, et cetera, since 2022. And I think the New York Times did a brilliant article, which got little attention a few months ago, called The Partnership. This has become a proxy war. The Ukraine war is not the United States war. Europe has decided, however, that it is going to rearmament of Europe is now a generational struggle for identity in Europe. Putin, I think, and especially Trump, see Europe playing more of a role in the security discussion. Maybe UN peacekeepers, but it's not going to be U.S. troops, and it's going to be some form. But it is important that that is where the discussion now centers to some extent, because it reprises the former diplomatic negotiations of Minsk I, Minsk II, which have been aborted, sabotaged, undermined by both the Russians and the United States. But it is ironic to see Marco Rubio arguing against sanctions, more sanctions on Russia, considering his role in Cuba, et cetera. But it's at a point where you have different elements. There are those inside the Trump administration, I'll stop, who would like to end the Ukraine war to pivot to China. But there are those who see the idea of U.S. troops on the ground as heretical. And Europe is trying to find its identity in the belief, a narrative belief that I think has deformed U.S.-Russian foreign policy and European, that Russia is an inherently expansionist power. I know that's heretical, but I don't think Russia wants to pay pensions in the Baltics. Russia has been exposed to a large extent as a weak power. Putin thought he could take Ukraine in 3 days. The army has been revealed in Russia and in Ukraine as being not as strong. So I think we're on a track that is going to find an end and hopefully in addressing root causes.
I want to go to French President Emmanuel Macron speaking Sunday ahead of Ukrainian President Zelensky's meeting with President Trump and Macron and the other European leaders today at the White House.
Nous devons rentrer dans une nouvelle phase diplomatique.
We must enter a new diplomatic phase, one in which we assume responsibility for having and defending the interests of Europeans. We're going there tomorrow, not just to accompany Ukrainian President Zelensky, but to defend the interests of Europeans. Europe doesn't want to be at the table for major discussions as a topic of discussion. Europe must be at the table to discuss itself and its future. That's what I would like.
So that's the French president, Emmanuel Macron. He and Germany's leader, Friedrich Merz, as well as Giorgia Meloni of Italy, Ursula von der Leyen, head of the European Union, Alexander Stubb of Finland, Mark Rutte, the head of NATO, and Keir Starmer, the British prime minister, will all be there. What are each of their interests, or are they all the same, Katrina?
It's interesting that Rutte, who is the head of NATO, an institution that is not known just for coffee clutches. It's been expanding in the last years. It's a haven for military companies, but it's also perceived as, you know, keeping Germany down, Russia out, America in. That was the mantra after World War II. NATO has been at the root cause of much conflict between the United States and Russia. But again, Europe now sees in Russia, Putin's Russia, they see hooves and horns, but they also see inherently expansionist Russia, which they are now defending against. As I said, having traveled in Europe in March to UK, France, and Germany, what you saw was a resurgent right against a kind of atomized center and a left that is finding its way, but that there is a sense of a generational commitment to rearming Europe to take on Russia. And you think of what is at the forefront of our security crises. You have a weakened Russia, already weakened, not as much as many would like, but you have security crises and you have pandemics and you have at the root of so much is also there should be more attention to the danger of escalation, nuclear escalation. And by the way, in the Western Hemisphere now, Ukraine has absorbed so much energy that there's been very little attention paid to the full dismantling of the infrastructure of arms control. In February 2026, the last remaining arms control agreement between the U.S. and Russia, START II, is either signed or it expires. John Bolton, who has pranced around the TV shows denouncing Trump, should remember that he, under George W., abolished the centerpiece of the arms control movement, the ABM. So there's a lot of work to be done in rebuilding, and certainly, I'll stop, rebuilding Ukraine. The damage, the ravage that Russia should participate in rebuilding costs. But you have 40% AWOL statistics now from the Ukrainian military, and Russia appears at some point to have been losing 1,000, 1,500 men a day. This is untenable. I think the battlefield facts are driving, to some extent, this pressure to find a ceasefire into a peace resolution.
I want to end with Ukrainian President Zelensky responding to the Putin-Trump summit while he was in Brussels, Belgium, during a joint news conference with the European Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen.
First of all, I don't know what Putin and President Trump actually talked about, and I want President Trump to tell me a lot of details, and then to European leaders. And the fact that President Trump gave a signal about security guarantees is much more important to me than Putin's thoughts, because Putin will not give any security guarantees. Security guarantees are a strong army. Only Ukraine can provide that.
So, Katrina Vandenhoevel, your final comments right now, as we move into today, this mass meeting at the White House, and where you see this ultimately all going. Do you see a trilateral summit with Zelensky, Putin, and Trump?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that's the best way. I think it's important that Zelensky's meeting with European leaders behind him with Trump. At the same time, there seems to be a kind of the way this relationship in the summit has been understood is a victory for Putin, is wrongheaded. It's a victory for moving away from ravage of war. But I do think that we're going to see process moving. And I hope that those in the prisons of both Ukraine and Russia, my colleague Boris Kagarlitsky, of many years, has been in prison in Russia for now 2 or 3 years, that the people are released, that there's a normalcy that returns as countries are being rebuilt. But Europe needs to rethink what security for Europe means. Does it mean this century-old return to warfare in Europe? When you witness Ukraine as little as we do, notice that it's kind of a World War I fighting in the trenches inch by inch with 21st century weapons. And I return, let us put down those weapons and talk, and find a real true security guarantee, not provided by Russia by any measure, but there's talk of armed neutrality, UN peacekeepers, and not, as Witkoff, special envoy to Moscow, said crazily, U.S. troops. That is the line against which all will stop.
Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor and publisher of The Nation magazine, expert on Russia, thanks so much for being with us. Up next, we go